This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 471, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Two of us riding nowhere, spending someone's hard-earned pay. You and me Sunday driving, not arriving on our way back home.
iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 471. It's a new era.
The bold new era.
Yeah, yeah, bold, quite bold, and spicy. My name is Josh Flanagan. I am with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
That's all you're going to get, fools.
It's all you deserve.
We're the ones who don't know how to stop. We are iFanboy. We like comics. We're like the Grand Canyon. It just gets chipped away over the eons until what you have left is beautiful.
That's true.
Every week we read our stack of comic books, which seems to get bigger every week, like the piles of snow outside many of our northeastern homes. One of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. We will talk about that book. We're going to talk about other books that we have something to say about, other stuff, and maybe we'll read some listener mail, do whatever. We're going to have a grand old time, as always. Here's your spoiler warning. This is a review show, so there will be some spoilers. There may be. I think you know what to do with that. Connor, you had the pick.
I had the pick, and I'll be honest. I didn't necessarily want this book to be the pick.
I think you and I are on the same page, and I'm excited to be able to talk about this.
I saw this book on the list, and I'm stretching this out in case no one read the name of the file, the name of the show on iTunes, the post on iFanboy. Like, there's anybody that just turns it on without looking, but. I saw this book on the list, and I thought, I'm annoyed at you, book, because I used to love you so much, and your incessant delays over the last five or six issues really sapped a lot of the joy out of my love for you. And then I read it, and I was like, well, fuck. So Hawkeye number 21 was the pick of the week. Matt Fraction, David Aja, Matt Hollingsworth, Chris Eliopoulos, and I just feel like this book... It runs on a level that very few books run on.
Well, I got to say, I went through, I want to go ahead and say an identical thing. And so if you're out there thinking you're going to get two guys arguing about whether that matters, like I went through exactly the same thing where I just thought, oh, God, this. And I kind of looked and I was like, well, is it at least Aja? And I was like, oh, it is. And I was like, all right, I'll read. I don't really remember what happened. And by the end, I was just like, you know. And it's funny because I think that, there are other artists out there who we do not hold to the same standard. And this is what occurred to me is I don't know that we're being fair to this book. Because I know that you and I have on several occasions said, you know, listen, if Frank Quitely can do four issues a year, then do four issues a year. And none of us have complained, listen, it took him too long. And I don't know that this should be any different.
I will concede. I'm not saying it's irrational or irrational. I think it's fair to say... I think it's fair for someone to say your monthly book should come out monthly. I don't necessarily always subscribe to that theory. However, I just feel like we are loving this book so much, and it is disappointment on my end that I don't get to read it more often. That's all it is.
It's not like it's an ongoing thing, and so when you get back into it, it's like, hey, what is this?
Exactly. It took me a while to remember where we were at and who the characters were, and that Clint was deaf. Matt is blind. Clint is deaf because I forgot he got. I don't even remember how he lost his hearing. Because
he got shot in the ear.
That's right.
By white-faced guy.
So.
And don't expect me to remember the minor characters' names, because it's been a long time.
I also didn't know that was Jessica Drew in the beginning. Anyway.
I think she's the hottest one.
I know, but I didn't know who it was at first, and then I thought she was talking strange because I didn't remember he was deaf, and then I realized he was reading her lips. Anyway, the point is, it's just disappointment. I wanted to love you more, Hawkeye, and you kept tantalizing me and then going away like a crazy girlfriend.
I gotta say, that's pretty in keeping with the character built in this book.
Maybe it's a whole meta thing.
I mean, it damn well could be. And I think at the beginning, like, neither of us are the biggest Matt Fraction fans.
No, but
and so it was reluctant even to start, like, it, for us to be like, yeah, that, you know, that is pretty good. And I remember like the first, what is this? This is 21. Yeah. The first one was so long ago that when it came out, Jim Viscardi, who was working at Marvel at the time, wanted to make sure we read it.
I thought you were going to say you didn't have kids when it first came out.
It might have been that long ago. I definitely only had one. But like that's because it feels like he's been gone from Marvel for a really long time. He's been on the show since then. Like, yeah. I remember him being like, I don't ever do this to you. And it's true, he didn't. He was like, you have to read this, because he knew I liked Hawkeye. But he also, like, he listened to the show. He knew not big Fraction fans. And he was, you know, I made the pick of the week. Like, I was not going to read it. I was like, oh, I'm doing it because I'm a jerk. I'm an idiot. But it's very good. And like, as I kept reading it, I just kept going, boy, this is still doing that special thing that I am not even close to tired of.
What's really funny is I actually was thinking back to that first issue as I was reading this, because this is the second to last issue of this run. And we don't know when the last one will come out. It'll come out in 2017. But I remember talking about it, and actually Hawkeye number 2 was the pick of the week, and that was in September of 2012.
Gosh, you know what? I actually wrote a review of Hawkeye number 1 that wasn't a pick of the week review.
Yeah, you wrote it. I just Googled us ourselves while we were talking. You wrote an advanced review of Hawkeye number 1 in July of 2012.
Right. Because Marvel didn't give us stuff in advance very often, ever.
Right.
Back then.
Anyway.
They don't now.
You gave it a 4.5 out of 5 stars.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what's funny, I remember discussing this book on the show, and we were like, these bro guys, they're not going to be around for the whole series.
I love that we are the same.
And
right now.
We were like, there's no way. They're kind of funny, but mostly annoying. And they're probably just a one-note joke for the beginning, but they're not going to be around the whole time. And they literally have been around the whole time. And I love them.
I do too. I hate that I'm saying this, but I'm like, I don't know why this annoyed me.
Well,
I don't know.
It's like that joke that's funny for kind of funny, and then it's told again, and you're annoyed, and it's told again, and you're annoyed, and eventually it wears you back around to funny again.
Yeah.
And I love these bro guys, and I kind of want them to take over the building just because they're awesome. But so this is the final stand of Hawkeye and his United Colors of Benetton neighbors who live in this Williamsburg, or is it Bedford-Stuyvesant building in Brooklyn, and this whole series has been about them fending off these, are they Russian or the Eastern European?
I think they're Russian. I don't think that was said.
Who want to own this building. But Hawkeye owns the building because he has a lot
of
money.
It's Brooklyn. They'd be Russian.
Probably. So this is the final siege of the building by all these gun-toting Adidas pants and shoes-wearing bro Russians who say bro all the time. And we've got Hawkeye, who can't hear. We've got his brother Barney, who's paralyzed. He was shot a couple issues ago. And then the other just regular people who live there defending their building. And I really liked that aspect of it. I mean, it's called Rio Bravo.
Yeah.
The title of the issue, which is a famous John Wayne movie most people probably haven't seen to listen to the show. But I like the siege aspect of it. I like the, you know, the old man on the roof with the barbecue pits pouring hot coals and the guys. I like the alt girl driving the old charger into the whatever kind of car it is. Ron would probably yell at me. Into the group of guys outside. I like that sort of everybody coming together against all odds aspect. And they really are against all odds. I mean, even by the end, you don't, you know, Clint's even been taken out. So, and Barney is.
By the dude's mother.
Yeah. The baseball bat. He wasn't looking. And then
couldn't hear.
Then maybe Barney's dead. Well, it looks like he's dead because he's been stabbed through the back. And he's well. Anyway,
he went out Chibi Skywalker style.
He did.
I love.
Why did you make me think of that?
Anyway, sorry, it's the only thing I remember from that movie.
This is the best thing that Fraction's ever written. And I was actually finished this issue, and I thought as soon as they announce the omnibus collection of this series, I'm gonna buy it. They won't even finish the announcement. I'll have purchased it already.
Yeah, that's not unusual for you.
No, but this is like one of those books you're going to look back on and say, how did this get published? And
yeah,
it's a clinic. I mean, it's a great story.
I don't know that it's a clinic because it's so...
It's a clinic in art.
Singular to I don't see anybody else being able to do this. Like this pacing, this language, this feel, the way that Fraction... I mean, I've read lots of Fraction books, and I remember lots of David Aja books, but this, you know, this is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like Marvel comics. It doesn't feel like American comics. It doesn't.
It feels very European.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of things all at once.
And
it's Siegecraft, for God's sakes.
It also feels very contemporary.
Yes.
In that everyone looks like they exist in the world right now. We've discussed that many times about this book, but it is not a minor thing.
No.
That especially when you look at a lot of the books published across the aisle and people look like they were from 15 years ago.
Well, that has been a thing in comic books for years, is that guys draw people wrong. Who's the big one?
Romita? Alan Davis?
Yeah, Alan Davis. That's the one I was always like, that's a guy who just can't draw a person who looks modern. Or Brent Anderson over at Astro City. Like, but yeah, you're totally right. Even down to their haircut, like, you know, just the way that Clint's tie is knotted, you know, like it's.
I'm impressed his shirt stays tucked in through all this madness.
Well, he's got the same kind that Daniel Craig got for Skyfall. It's those shirts, man.
Because I go to a wedding and I go to the dance floor, and in 2 minutes I got things untucked everywhere.
I gotta tell you, you're probably not built like a superhero.
I have a long torso. I have a problem just with staying tucked in. But
yeah.
So I guess Natasha's coming. Was that who's getting off the plane there in the middle of the book? The book.
I don't know.
But
Northern Ireland now.
The book.
Duke and the book.
So I, you know,
yes.
This was the girlfriend that drives you nuts, and then you're like, never again. She shows up at your door, and you go, all right, fine. Mm-hmm. You can't fight it. This book's crazy good, and I'm kind of bummed. There's only one more issue.
I remember starting it and thinking, I kind of hope this is it because I don't want to be put on this yo-yo anymore.
True. I can see that.
But then I got to the end of it, and I was like, and we're talking about it now, and I'm thinking, that's why would I not want more of this if I could get it? However, I'm really excited. I really started to think, I'm like, what has David Aja been doing? Because he did quite a bit of issues for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it slowed way down. So what's he been doing? Or is this just how long it takes him now? But I'm super excited to see what else he'll do next. Like, he's become one of those artists that, you know, I will, you know, sight unseen. You know, he's Darwin Cook level or Frank Quitely level of I will buy the project that you draw art for. And I just have to hope that, you know, it's somebody, you know, who he's really just syncing with.
I'm really looking forward to reading it all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not that many chapters. You got 21 issues. A good 5 or 6 of those were the Kate chapters in California.
Hey, skip right over those.
Right. What I'm saying is I really want to sit down and read all these Fraction Aja issues together and really just see how the story flows. Because it's been hard. It's been 2 years of you basically averaging less than an issue every other month.
Well, the last one that came out before this, we had looked and it had been February of last. There's only been 2 issues in the last year.
Right. So I really want to sit down and read it all together and just really see how the story flows. I'm really looking forward to that quite a bit. And before we move on to the next book, I want to read to you from your review of the first issue.
No.
This is verbatim Josh, so just...
Oh, Christ.
The quote is, I really only have one minor grouse with the issue as a whole. The villains are tracksuited Russian thugs. That's what they look like in real life, and I agree that they also say bro a lot, but in this issue they say bro a lot. They say bro too much. It was overdone, and it just had the effect... relying on a thin, one-dimensional cultural stereotype in place of building a character in reality. It also annoyed me. He said bro an awful lot. So you've come all the way around.
I have, but it's exactly the effect that you just named.
Mm-hmm.
like, it really, if that's all it was, and they had just done it at that point, but they just stuck with it. So they're like the unrelenting, you know, like surging of, well, of foreigners, of immigrants is what it is. I'm mm-hmm. sure that's, he's saying that immigrants, specifically Russian immigrants, are ruining Brooklyn. I'm pretty sure that's the message of the book, right? They don't have to have a face or a name.
Right.
Or just crime. Maybe it's
I had some very nice Russian neighbors who made really great pizza for a while.
They did?
And delivered that pizza in a Mercedes. That's all I'm going to say.
That doesn't make economic sense, Connor.
So I'll be honest, almost pick of the week was Velvet Number 9 from Ed Brubaker, Steve Epting, Betty Breitweiser, Image Comics.
I'll be honest.
Yes.
I read this in 6 minutes before we started the show.
This is one of my favorite issues. I mean, it's the middle of the arc. We had a bunch of reveals in the last issue. Velvet broke this guy out of spy prison, and then we find out who he is and what he
knows. It's super insane asylum for spies.
Right. And what I love about this book is that by the end of it, I had no idea who to trust, what was going on in the best possible way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not following the story, but there's so many people backstabbing each other and telling lies and covering things up that by the end, I was like, well, I don't know who to trust. I don't know who's telling the truth. I don't know what's going on. I just know that it's awesome.
There was a superb turn that happened at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going along with Velvet. You're like, all right, well, I like this. This is a nice solution. This would be cool if it was, nope. Nope. But it also, like, he was the head of espionage and intelligence.
Right.
Hey. So he's a bad guy. And I don't, I think there are probably people who are reading this, so I don't want to even get specific. I don't think we need to. If you read it, you know. But it was a really, I mean, we've been talking about this. It's almost, I don't want to say it's a Brubaker renaissance.
It is.
But it is a Brubaker renaissance. Ed got his groove back.
I found myself reading this and being really impressed with the dialogue.
Yes.
I thought this was one of his more crackling issues because I keep calling them episodes. I'm tired.
I do that. I did that. I called TV issues the other day.
Going forward, if I say episodes, I mean issues. So
sure.
In this issue, it's a lot of just talking heads. Velvet and this guy are talking in a hotel. They're talking in a train. So a lot of it is just crackling dialogue that keeps you on the edge of your seat. And also, Steve Epting does amazing stuff with facial expressions in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, whose name I don't know, but the guy she broke out, he's really, a lot of what he's just saying is told through whatever his eyes are saying. And his there's when he walks off at the end of the issue, he's got that look on his face. That's when I realized something might have been up. I thought it was really just spectacularly done from both sides.
They did that thing with him where, like, he just kept looking more healthy and robust as it kept going on, sort of it isn't this, but the sort of Kaiser Soze,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of like got better. He fooled us.
Yeah.
you know.
But then again, I don't know if he was fooling us or just wanted to escape. The thing is, I don't trust the bosses that their story is correct.
Yeah, but they were talking to each other.
But
they're not lying. They could be wrong, but they're not lying.
The boss could be lying to the investigator. He could be. Maybe. He may be covering up his crimes. That's what's so great about this is I don't know.
You're right. You're right. I want to believe the most simple thing.
But I just think right now, Brubaker, between this and the fade out and criminals coming back, is he's operating on a level we haven't seen since the criminal Captain America heydays.
He's got some. He's definitely got some. Just whatever it was that he felt like we're like, oh, did he use up everything he had? You know, and he has not. He's definitely found like he's found his niche,
mm-hmm.
you know. Maybe he used up everything he had for Marvel. I did everything I could with the superheroes. And it was good work. But now he gets to do this, which is really cool.
I just think some of the dialogue in this issue is some of the best I've read in a while.
It's interesting,
really well written.
Because it didn't used to be that when a mainstream creator had sort of finished up their time at Marvel or DC, that there was really anything for them to do in comics anymore. At least that would
make
them a living,
the outlet.
Or make an impact. And now there is, and that's very interesting. You know, some Jerry Conway or something went to work in television or something like that, where where they're not really known anymore. But
well, 20 years ago, Brian K. Vaughan never would have come back to comics.
That's true.
He would have gone to Hollywood. He would have gotten his shows, and he would have toiled away writing. I mean, I say toiled for a giant paycheck writing
It's a hard job.
No, it is. But writing shows, he doesn't really want to be writing instead of being able to make a really good living writing comics. So
yeah,
it's good. It's now, I gotta believe at this point that DC's just fucking with us.
Now I heard about Superman, and I don't read it, so let me know what's going on.
You started reading this arc.
I read like the first one, and missed one, and then didn't because I kind of didn't care.
All right, well, this is the final issue of that first arc in which Superman and Neil, what was his name or whatever his name was, something like that, basically the other version of himself, the kid who was sent to the other dimension to escape, and he's raised thinking that everyone on Earth died. He comes back. So in this issue, that's all wrapped up, and that's fine. That's not really the big deal. The big deal is that in fighting this guy, Superman is taken to the limit, and he's blasting him with his heat vision, and blasting him, and then suddenly he explodes, and it's this giant explosion, knocks the guy out. They wake up in a giant crater. Batman retrieves him and says, "You've been out for a while. Your clothes are all burned up. And here's what happened. You basically, so you know how Superman's powers are. He absorbs the sun's radiation and they store in his cells, and it powers him up, basically.
Sure.
So what he does here is he discovered the ability to release all that power in one blast. And so this does a couple of things. One, it destroys his awful armored costume, which was one of a kind, thankfully. And but it also renders him powerless for a period of time. So now he is human until he recharges. And it's not the worst thing in the world.
It's not the worst because it happened basically in Superman 2. But
it's just
video gamey.
This is not even the part. I haven't gotten to the part that made me angry. This is like I read it because I saw everybody freaking out about his new power, and I saw them announce he was going to get a new power, and I thought at least that makes sense with what he's already can do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I get it. It's a little gimmicky. Now they can make him human whenever they want, and the next issue is called like 24 Hours as a Human or something like that.
Does he walk?
He can't fly.
He should walk the Earth.
The next issue is called Human for a Day, so I'm sure that'll be interesting, but. Like, I still feel like they still don't know what to do with Superman other than take his powers away. But anyway, here we go. So he burned the costume off, so clearly he needs a new one. And and this issue also ends with him revealing his identity to Jimmy Olsen, the former billionaire who gave all his money away in the end of this issue. So he reveals a costume that's actually not that unlike the one that I really like that they use in the Smallville comic, where he's got some piping, but not as bad as before. And the belt, the boots look more like the old boots, and the cape looks okay. And they got rid of the V-neck thing, although now he's got like a little turtleneck.
Mock turtleneck. It's a mock turtleneck.
But they gave him fingerless gloves, which doesn't make any sense for anyone.
Like, he's a big fan of the break-in movies, both one and two.
It just doesn't. He doesn't have to do any driving.
Right.
So we don't need him for that. I just don't understand why they... I mean, if you take away the gloves, I'm actually perfectly fine with this costume.
It's not... No, it doesn't make any sense because it's not even hip.
Right.
You know, like it's not like they've looked at current fashion and been like, that's the thing. Or maybe it is. I don't know. Maybe that's a thing.
Well,
maybe Romita like picked up like an Esquire or GQ, and he went to the back with all the super expensive clothes, and some dude there was wearing fingerless gloves, and he was like, that's it. That's happening.
Well, what's funny, first of all, is it's not that much different from the other suit that makes it like a big deal to be that totally different. But
agree.
It just doesn't – I don't understand. Like why – what would be the – what is the point of giving him fingerless gloves? It doesn't make any sense. Just give him gloves. If you're going to go all the way, just give him gloves.
That doesn't make any sense because there's no fabric that could stand up that would be stronger than his hands. It doesn't make sense. He'd just lose dexterity for no reason. And you want the dexterity when you're picking up, say, a tanker or something like that.
Sure. Maybe he's got an iPhone 6 and needs to be able to open it with his thumbprint. But
I would like to know the reasoning.
And if the
reasoning is anything other than it looks cool, which is untrue, it's wrong.
Yeah. So I wasn't as outraged as I thought, although it is a terrible, terrible designed to have him have the gloves. But the power thing is, I'm kind of curious to see what they're gonna do with it. I hope they don't abuse making him human too often. Now, let me tell you about my comics routine, Josh, and all the people listening.
Okay.
Is I like to make a cup of tea and sit down and read my comics. It's a nice.
This isn't a joke. This is a real thing.
No, this is absolutely what I do. It's a nice little soothing thing I do. Go brew a little cup of green tea.
You've changed.
Read some comics. Halfway through Nameless Number One, the new Grant Morrison, Chris Burnham book from Image, I had to make sure I didn't accidentally brew the LSD tea. I had to look to make sure. Nope, it's the green tea, not the one.
You keep that in the sort of brown pot next to the.
I thought maybe I'd gone for the wrong tea bag because. What did you think of this?
I don't know. I knew going into it that it's a Grant Morrison first issue, and as a rule, they don't usually grab me.
Right.
With Grant Morrison, I have to go, all right, we're gonna play the long game, and all this stuff is either going to make sense or it's not, and then maybe I give it another try in 10 years and see if it makes sense then.
Right.
That's my Grant Morrison formula. So with this, I don't know, because it was really weird for a bit, not all that far off from, like what Hickman did last week, in that there's a world beneath the world, and there's another thing going on. Then at the end, it got very real, I suppose.
I actually thought it was the opposite of Hickman's book, in that the first half of this, I was completely 100% lost.
Okay.
And then I thought the second half made way more sense. Whereas,
I meant it in broader strokes.
It was structurally, I found myself less confused in the end than in the beginning as opposed to Hickman's book. But anyway, it's some sort of supernatural science, save the world from an asteroid using a Constantine-esque necromancer character, because there's a rune on the asteroid, so they had to get this guy. And
so basically what I said was, all right, we're just gonna read it and try and keep track of what's going on, because honestly not terribly hooked on the premise. So then the other half of it is like, I'm going to see what Burnham does, because he's a guy whose work I like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy I like a lot. So, and it's really cool to see him achieve a level of success. And I think that it was really well executed. I can only imagine what the script looks like.
I thought of that too, actually.
You know, but the craft was very nice. I never got lost for a second reading it. I think if you look at, there's such a page. It's the one where he comes out and he's in his underwear and he's standing on the road trying to flag down the bus.
I'm actually looking at that page, yes.
And all the signs are backwards or upside down, and like the street looks wet. Like, it's a great, look at that. That's great. That's London. You know, exactly what it is. You know, so all that stuff's all really cool and it was well done.
And then the snake is going to swallow its penis tail.
There's a ton of skill and craft going on, and I like that part, but I can't say that I was, but that's what I expected.
Well, the cover is, it looks like three astronauts with suits that are covered in runes and incantations. So some sort of magic science story, which I'm not necessarily against. I just was very confused in the beginning.
Yeah.
The beginning was the classic action movie opening scene in which the main character is involved in something usually unrelated to the main plot, just so you get a sense of who the character is.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll know what to expect later. But I had such a hard time following what was going on that I didn't have any sense of the character.
You didn't know what was the idol and what was the whip.
Right. I just know there was some. I didn't know if those were dudes were actually lizard dudes, or they were wearing lizard dude masks.
Mm-hmm.
Or fish piranha masks or whatever. I just know some shit was going down.
Actually, that's actually kind of interesting. So the very first thing in the very first thing that happens is, like, you see a family get completely murdered, you know, mm-hmm. and they blame, I guess that's the dad.
Yeah.
You know, but you see, you know, that there's lizard men who do it. And I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting. And they sort of are making the leap that all of the horrible things that happen are really not people, but are the lizard people. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. And then I forgot about it.
Right.
Because that didn't seem to go with anything else that we'd seen. Then there were a lot of silly words. that I don't know.
Yeah.
The main character seems to be fairly grounded, so that was helpful. Yeah, I don't know.
I didn't dislike it. I was just very confused for much of it.
It was Grant Morrison's first issue.
One where he had
utter control. Yeah. So, you know, you've got to say, am I going to go through with this or not? Right. And I was like, okay, let's just go through with
it.
It
doesn't always work. Like, I couldn't make it through the filth.
Nope.
And books like that. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Now, last time Ant-Man came out, Ant-Man number 2, this is the newest issue, we both enjoyed it, but didn't know that we wanted to continue because we didn't know that we were interested in the premise of the story.
So did you go and read the second one?
Well, you made me.
Right, right. And now I'm curious what you thought.
I liked it.
I liked it too.
I think Nick Spencer, when Nick Spencer first came on, he was one of the most exciting new voices that had come out in a while at the time. If you remember, there was a lack of new writers in comics at the time. And I think he stumbled a bit in the beginning, but he's come on really strong the last couple of years. And he seems to be living in that corner that Fraction carved out with Hawkeye of the down and out hero just stumbling to get by, not necessarily in superheroics either. I think that was what very much Superior Foes was.
Yeah.
And now Ant-Man is. And it's good. It's really good. I mean, this is some of the best writing from him I've ever read. I think he's got a great handle on these characters. I thought it was a really funny issue.
Mm-hmm.
Something about it, though, is keeping me from loving it, and I don't know what it is.
Well, it's a little goofy.
I don't necessarily mind that, though.
No, I know you don't, but, you know, like, at the end of this, he sort of stumbled into success through no fault of his own.
Right.
Meaning, like, it just happened that the woman, you know, was like, I like your chutzpah, kid.
Yeah, so in the first issue, if you recall, he was trying to become head of Stark Security, and he does. He gets hired, but he has to turn the job down because his ex-wife is moving Cassie, his daughter, who's also a young Avenger, to Florida. This is Miami?
Yeah.
And he wants to go be with her, so he doesn't take the job and moves to Miami. And this is the story of him trying to get a job in Miami. He's trying to get a loan from the bank. They won't give him a loan because he's the worst credit risk ever. But luckily, he decides he's going to show off what he can do. He wants to start a security company, so he opens up everything to the bank to show how easy it is to get into the bank, but not realizing there's a Nazi robot that can turn you to gold with its alchemical blast. And so he saves the day, and the president of the bank, this old crusty woman, doesn't give him the loan, but it's like she's going to invest in his business. And so now he's got a business, and he's got an employee who wears a bear exoskeleton suit.
And that was, to me, that was the real thing that made it for me.
Mm-hmm.
Was the sort of head and tail of the book was at the beginning, guy in bear suit, and it's a funny bear suit.
Yeah. It's really hot in Miami, don't you think?
Absolutely. But it's an exoskeleton bear suit, so it's not like he's taking it off.
It would smell so badly.
The guy got, you know, he broke out, he got out of jail, and all he's been thinking about is getting revenge on Ant-Man. And he's like, well, wait, when did that happen? And he's like, it was during the siege, which, by the way, just referencing the siege was funny to me.
Yeah.
And he's like, that wasn't me.
Call it the siege.
And then he's like, Google it. And he's like, oh, I guess it wasn't you. And that's sort of the end of that. And then he hires him at the end. They have coffee together. And I was like, okay, that's goofy. Which is, by the way, super similar to She-Hulk.
Right.
I mean, it's got the same sort of formula going on.
I would put She-Hulk in this same corner of the Marvel Universe. Yeah.
So, you know, this will be good. Normally this would be good for 12 issues, but there's a movie coming out. So, right. And then Taskmaster's coming. I love Taskmaster, so.
I'm going to stick with it. Because I think the art's really good too.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what it is. I don't really like Scott Lang that much.
No, but you give your, you know, get your chance to. Who's the woman? Do we know who the woman is? Morgenstern, is it?
I don't know. She could be somebody from the Golden Age.
Yeah. All right.
But Ramon Rosanas is the artist, and it's really good, really strong.
One of my other favorites was his billboard has. Chairman on it saying I'd hire him. There's one cutaway, just one, to Tony Stark sitting in a chair going, Sue. it's a great
I think it's he I think Spencer does a really good job. He always has done a really good job of weaving humor in through these things.
Yep.
So I'm gonna continue with it.
Cool. I would like you to continue with buying things through ifanboy.com/Amazon.
Okay.
I'm not just talking to you.
Oh.
Although you could I don't know how you could support us because it's awkward, but you could almost do it. I'm saying he's a guy who likes Amazon. But if you're out there and you want to help support the show, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, and that will bring you through to Amazon.com. And after that, it's exactly like your normal Amazon experience. But what you do helps us. I know it's insane, but that's actually how it works. So it doesn't really take any effort on your part, and we take a little cut of the purchases that you make. It doesn't cost you anything, and it helps us out a lot. It's actually a really big deal to us. So keep using that link if you haven't. Start using that link. Or you can go to ifanboy.com/registration, which is, you know, now that we don't have Paul... Paul did a lot of manual labor on the side, yeah. And that was – he took that money.
Someone's going to clean the offices now that he's gone.
We took that money. Yeah. I mean, we have to hire – he did a lot of stuff we got to cover for now. But if you want to go to ifanboy.com/registration, you can become a regular contributing member at $3 a month or $30 a year. If the show is important to you and that's a thing that you feel like you want to contribute to, we would absolutely appreciate that. I definitely try to contribute to the podcasts that I like, that I listen to. Or any amount that you feel you want to give or can spare or anything like that. We appreciate all of it, and especially to the people who are already doing those things. Thank you. It does keep things going.
Who will get my coffee now?
Yes. You know, maybe it's just time to grow up a little bit, buddy.
So Action Comics 39 was also the final issue of this arc with the zombies and Smallville story that we've been enjoying from Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter. This issue with some art assists from Scott Collins, who we always enjoy. And just I want to just briefly mention that we've mentioned a lot over this run that Pak really gets Superman. And the ending of this particular story really showed that he was attacked with a fear monster. He was feeling some very legitimate fear and seeing the future of having to live in a world where everyone dies. And but he pushes it down and saves the day. And I thought, you know, that doesn't give up, doesn't give in. And I thought that was a really... I mean, that's end of the day, that's what Superman has to be. And Pak really gets that.
I really liked the bit of Steel's armor that made them like, well, I can have it regulate my heart and feelings. I was like, geez.
It's Vulcan armor.
Yeah, I know. And then he used it on Superman. And I was like, that's really cool. I don't know that I've heard that.
That's really powerful.
It is. What a really interesting concept that. I mean, you know who has Emma
means you up.
Emma Frost?
Yeah.
Yeah, she has that. When she goes diamond, she's unfeeling. So that's sort of it. But this is like a dial on it.
Yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. That's just that one thing out of there that I was
actually like, looking at this costume here, the new one is way closer to the original than this one.
Mm-hmm.
I think the boots have a lot to do with it, but
God. Isn't the Ultra Humanite a gorilla?
He was kind of a gorilla man, yeah.
And now he's whatever this thing
was. Tentacled vagina monster.
It's this Cthulhu skull thing.
Superman looks like he's coming out of the birth canal.
Yeah, that's true.
So I wonder what's going to happen with the beard. What the future of the beard is. Because he's got a beard in one book, but no beard in the other book.
I got to the end of this one and I was like, if I turn this last page and everything is shiny and he shaved that beard off, I'm off this book.
But he's not.
He still had that beard and the guy wanted to stop for food. And I was cool with it.
It's good. It's a really good
for now.
Really good.
I'm telling you though, that beard is pretty important to my enjoyment of this book.
Well, the thing is, we're talking about what's in and what's not in. Romita should have noticed in that issue of whatever he looked up to find the fingerless gloves that beards are in.
He should have looked over in Action Comics to see the beards were in. I mean, that's Romita. Romita's a really great example of one of those guys.
Yeah.
Like, I love the way that he draws comics, and I love his storytelling, but, you know, I don't want him dressing me.
No.
You know? And no. We're going back to that, but, you know, Cooter, I really love the way this book looks, too.
And working in Collins worked really well. Their style is very complementary.
Very, yeah.
And so it really, I knew whenever whoever was drawing what page, but it didn't really throw me off because their styles are so similar.
Yeah. Didn't bother me.
Nope. What's Sheltered? I forget what Sheltered is.
Sheltered is, it says right here on the cover, it's a pre-apocalyptic tale by Ed Brisson and Johnny Christmas. Let's see, this is issue 14. I can't imagine there are too many more of this. This is definitely isn't the last one. But Image series about a bunch of kids, and they're in one of those end of the world sort of type situations where they have a bunker and a bunch of weapons and stuff. But at the end of the first issue, they killed all their parents because the sort of charismatic leader guy figured out that would be the best way to survive going forward and that the parents would actually appreciate it. which you could never tell because they were dead. And then, like, over the course of the issues, you've seen the fact that they're children, and they make poor decisions and have bad impulse control, has sort of ruined this for them. And there's a, you know, then the FBI has to come in, and this is sort of the big siege, where the FBI is like, they have shot down a helicopter with an RPG, which, you know, forced the hand of the authorities that they have to go in and take down these kids, which is a powder keg, mm-hmm. for the authorities, because, you know, they're all kids. I've been reading this. I've sort of waxed and waned a little bit with it, but I've been reading it all the way through. This is a really good sort of culmination issue. And I think it's still worth reading. So if, you know, like, if you were going to pick up these trades, it's a good little story, sort of rooted in, you know, pretty much our real world. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
Star Wars number 2. Star Wars number 1 was pick of the week. This was the continuation. We can spoil that the big reveal in the last issue with Darth Vader showed up. So in this issue, you get a lot of Vader action. Vader wielding two lightsabers. Vader holding off an AT-AT, trying to stomp on him. Vader throwing lightsabers through people. What'd you think?
I didn't like this one as much as the last one. For one thing, it was you guys made me notice the art.
Sorry.
And I couldn't help but notice, especially Leia's scrunchy face.
Yep.
And squishy. Like, I was like, that's not right. So I tried not to focus on those things, but I really did get the sense that, oh, that does look like a light box face. But I also think that just how he draws. I think if you go back and you read Planetary, that's kind of what they look like. But there was definitely a couple that I just noticed it. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't want to. It's a really slippery slope for me with these stories between the stories.
Right.
Because honestly, if Luke and Vader had faced off against each other in any way, that very much changes
what
happens in Empire.
Yeah, so in this issue, Luke comes at Vader with his lightsaber, and I had the same exact thought that, well, that sort of changes their first confrontation if they've already had their first confrontation.
Right.
They should never have met before. Really, what this book should do, and I hate to be that guy who says that thing, but... Mm-hmm. And I don't remember the Marvel book as well as I should, but I did read it a lot when I was a kid, is that they should just go off and have adventures that don't involve Darth Vader.
But you also understand why they are.
I understand that. But
and they're flexing their muscles, but it really is a lot of, you know, it would be cool. Let's have Han Solo drive an AT-AT at everybody.
Right. Which was cool. And Luke riding a speeder bike like he's a knight wielding his lightsaber mowing down stormtroopers was also cool, but...
Yes, but...
It becomes sticky.
But then that stuff all become... And I'm not going to use the fan service. I'm not going to say that. But there's a lot of, you know, wouldn't this be cool? Which isn't necessarily in and of itself bad, but I don't know. I got a lot of, like, putting all this cool stuff in there. And also they're flexing their muscles in that Marvel is Disney, is Lucasfilm... And what happens in these books is canon. Mm. Like, well, this is... No, it is. That's the official word. And even, you know, you've said forever, you know, you make your own continuity or whatever, right. But it's, you know, that's the fact. But the whole time that Vader is holding Luke's lightsaber, I was like, you shouldn't be holding that. Like, it was really bothering me. Like, a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where Vader, like, looks down and he kind of recognizes it. And he's like, I know this weapon this once belonged to. And I was like, this all shouldn't be happening now.
None of this is right. Stop it.
It shouldn't, because it shouldn't have happened off screen from the movies is basically, I think, what I'm getting at. Like, right. It feels so, like, you know, I thought from an adventure fun sort of standpoint, storytelling standpoint, voices. I didn't think Darth Vader's voice was a little weird.
Yeah, I don't think he speaks in contractions. I was trying to think of an instance in the movies where he spoke with a contraction, but
I don't know.
I don't think he does.
Oh, too. Like, you know, he kind of quoted himself a little bit. I don't know. It was weird. I
get a weird vibe from it.
I was left a little uneasy. I get what they're trying to do, and I think they're doing what they're trying to do well. But by the way, you can totally see a couple of places here where Cassidy's already starting to fall apart. Look at the end. There's the four stormtroopers on the speeder bikes. They just look weird. They look squished. Like, they don't have necks.
Yeah.
And then there's a shot of he drew the hell out of that AT-AT. I'm gonna give him that.
Mm-hmm.
No complaints there. You know, the speeder bikes, you know, you did great with that. There's a shot of the Millennium Falcon from the side, and it looks bent.
Well, those scavengers got to it.
No, and the cockpit's like too short. And like if you look at the back, are you looking at the page?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then like the back is sort of.
It does look bent.
Like it's not well done. And there's a lot of guys.
It looks like it's bent solely to fit into the panel.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's not the perspective's not right on it.
And I recognize everyone out there listening, grinding their teeth, that we are being very hard in this book because it's a source material that means so much to us.
Yeah, but it's also one of our absolute favorite writers who.
True.
we've been very forgiving, and haven't even needed to be forgiving of. But, you know, these are the things I thought when I read it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I did not feel good about the confrontation between Luke and Vader.
No.
Not at all.
No. But I know why. If you're doing a book called Star Wars and you want people to read it, I get that. Mm-hmm. And then this is the final cut. This may not be for us.
True.
You know, maybe we're not the audience for it. I mean, you know, that's okay too.
I mean, I just wish they could do what they did before and just go off. And I remember as a kid always hating that they were off on their own doing their own things. And I'm sure there were stories that where they fought the Empire.
Well, like Shadows of the Empire, though, like that fit right in perfectly.
Right.
I don't know how I'd feel if I read that now for the first time.
True.
I don't know.
So there you go.
Real quick, I just wanted to mention it's a Vertigo series. I'm actually reading several Vertigo series now. Wolf Moon number 3. You may remember my first review of this by Colin Bunn and Jeremy Hahn.
I do.
Where I said this is a werewolf story.
You weren't super into it.
You know what? It's warmed on me a little bit. I keep reading it. I like these guys, so I've been trying to read it and get out of my comfort zone for genre. And it's kind of an interesting werewolf story. That's the most I think I'm going to give it, but I want to know what's going to happen.
It's kind of an interesting werewolf story, Josh Flanagan, iFanboy.
No, sorry, that's not bad for me. When it comes to werewolf stories, like I kind of want to know what's going to happen. It's got the conceit of how the werewolf works, and this is kind of interesting. And I don't think it can go on forever.
Of the story? What is the main plot?
The werewolf is like a disease sort of thing that sort of jumps from person to person. And so there's one guy, and it turns out there are other guys too, and they are, you know, they were the wolf once, and they can't get over it. Like they can't, you know, move past it. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to hunt the wolf and kill it so that, you know, nobody else has to go through that. But, you know, like the dude can't eat steak anymore. You know, like that kind of thing.
That's
like
terrible.
It messed with his head.
That is a terrible thing to happen.
I know. But it's pretty violent and horrible, and the wolf is a real threat.
That's not really your kind of story at all.
Nope. But, you know, every once in a while you gotta move around a little bit. So there you go.
Well, there you go.
And if it sounds like your kind of thing, I think it's a good wolf story.
Those are the books we talked about this week. Go to iFanboy.com. You can find the post for this show and talk about other books or these books or anything else about comics this week. Do that at iFanboy.com. And now we can do at least one. This is an all Josh show. We got two emails from two guys named Josh. Let's try to get them both in. Joshua S. from Boys Ranch, Texas, has written this in before. I often hear you guys talk about the reasons you jump off of a book. I was curious, what does it take for you to jump back into a book that you had previously stopped reading? Do you have to be more persuaded to stop reading a book you're not enjoying, or to come back once you've dropped off? Which one's harder? Well, obviously, it's easy. It's harder to come back.
Yeah, I mean, but I think it takes a certain kind of book. That you're not going to come back to a book that's like a single creative team, single story, usually. Right. Unless, I mean, I guess, like, there's been time. Okay. If you started reading something, Scalped.
Okay.
I read the first issue or two. I decided at that time, for whatever reason, that week, I didn't like it. I wasn't going to read it. I came back because I had heard things about it, or I just was like, I don't know, I got an itch, you know? And I was like, I'll try it. And then I really liked it. Like I read like if you read the first issue and don't really like something, and then for some reason the trade is hanging around. This used to happen a lot more than because I had more time or whatever, you know. But I went back and I gave it more time. I read it all at once, and that I liked better. I didn't like the New Frontier the first time I read it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. That's stupid, but you know.
I think there's a couple of things that can happen. One is that if you, Josh, I was gonna say you guys, but you. Or someone else I know and trust, whose taste I trust, will be raving about a book that I tried and didn't like. I might give it a second look.
Yeah, that happens too.
Or if it's, if there's something major that's happening where everyone's talking about how, you know, this is a major book you have to be reading, I might go look at it again. Also, you mentioned this at the top, is that if the creative team changes.
Yes.
If there's a new writer or an artist, most usually new writer. Well, it could be new artist too, but it's very hard to come back to a book for me that I dropped if the story is the same, the creative team is the same, and nothing's changed.
Yes.
I can't even think of that happening.
I'm thinking. I mean, but it seems to make sense though that, like, you ever watch the first season of a television series and it sucks, and yeah, then after the Office, that it gets Parks really good. The Office, Parks and Recreation, you know, Justified. So first season didn't suck, but the second season was worlds better. So that happens there. It must happen in comics. Fables, I did that, and then I got off later. Those are ongoing stories, but, like, you know, on a mainstream book, you know, on a book that's been going for 30, 40 years, a new creative team, it's basically a new book.
Yeah.
So that's you know, that's just, oh, let's see what's going on here.
Yeah, like, well, a good example, that would be Detective Comics.
Yes.
We all stopped reading it with Manipole and Buccoletto on it, and because it just wasn't thrilling us. And then we all came back for the John Paul Leon art issues, and then so that's a book we dropped and came back to. But it's almost not the same book at that point.
No. You know,
the title's the same, the main character's the same, but it's not really the same book.
Yeah, somebody else is putting on that show.
Right.
And so it's basically, you know, that has to be the thing that brings you in. So, you know.
People I trust have to tell me I've made a mistake and or it's gotten better.
Yeah, and sometimes, I mean, like, we know each other. You know, like, I know, like, oh, he's not going to like this, or he is going to like this. It could go either way, but, yeah. I don't know. Does that work? You think we answered that? It's a good question. I can't believe that's never been asked.
But it also doesn't come up that often where we jump back on a book. It happens sometimes.
No, but I've definitely done it, and I've made mistakes. Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah. I got a second Josh question. Josh from Chicago.
Josh
from Chicago, Illinois. This email is mostly for Josh because I don't think Connor reads Manhattan Projects, and Paul is dead to us now. You mentioned Manhattan Projects briefly in the last episode, and while I have to agree that it can get a bit heavy on the philosophizing sometimes, don't sell it short in the action. What about the issue where General Groves invades the project space and then has to fight the genetically engineered monster that Einstein and Feynman created? Or the issue where Laika gets picked up by an alien spaceship, which then it gets attacked by another alien spaceship and she has to escape? Admittedly, this is not really a question for discussion, but none of my friends read the Manhattan Project, so I just want to hear someone talk about it.
I was, like, not with him, and then on the last one, I was like, all right, I get that. That's so, what we're here for.
Joke's on you, Josh. I do read the Manhattan Project. I read it in trades. Just not in issues.
I dropped off. Okay, but I think I can speak to this. Because what I said was there's a lot of talking and then nothing really seems to happen.
Right.
And I don't think that action set pieces are necessarily things happening.
Okay.
In terms of character or story progress, I guess. It was, or at least it wasn't moving in such a way that it ever grabbed me. And so, like, those things that happened, I can read that and go, that's really cool. But to me, it's like, you know, it's like an action movie that has some cool sequences, but ultimately you don't really care. Like the Fast and the Furious.
Ooh, whoa.
No. That's a whole other thing. That's a whole other, I don't even know what that is. But I know that, like, I couldn't get my wife to watch that movie to save my life. But we were, like, the one of the times we went to the movies, glorious movies, like the last the trailer for whatever the newest one, she looked at me, she's like, that was really cool. And I was like, I know. Why are they doing those things with cars?
So you would disagree that, well, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, because some books are not action books. I'm not as current. I think I'm two trades back on the Manhattan Projects. I have them. I just haven't gotten a chance to read them. But I wouldn't describe it as an action book.
I don't think. That's not why I would show up.
As alt science.
Alt history, yeah. Alt science thing. It's one of those other, like, this is the story, but this is what really happened.
Right.
You know.
And it's fun. It's fun in that way. I don't think it needs to be.
Yeah, my getting off of it wasn't really a criticism of it. I don't think it was bad. It just wasn't scratching whatever itch I wanted to.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't think it was bad.
The thing is, you don't emotionally tend to connect to the Hickman stories.
Yes, that's true. That's very true. And
that's
fine.
That's totally
fine. I do need that. That's a thing for me. I definitely, like, I have.
But I think back even to when he first showed up and he was doing those three issue minis at Image.
Yeah.
One of the things I recall about them, and I'm sure we talked about it, was that they were a little cold and distant.
Yeah.
But because they were only three issues, and they were more about big ideas, like the Nightly News and the Red Master Mars and those books, it wasn't such a big deal because it was more like a snapshot of a thing.
Yeah.
Than a long and involved thing you have to get involved. You have to really emotionally invest into. If there's nothing to emotionally attach yourself to, then you shouldn't read it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I'd gotten, 10, 12 issues in or whatever, and I was like, all right, that's what this is going to be. And I felt the same way about East and West. Every single one of his books has a, I'm going to use this loosely, villain who is a super calm, everything under control dude who speaks very intelligently and rationally, and they know everything that's going on. That's every single book. It's East and West. It's whatever those Avengers villains were.
He's cast himself as the villain in all these books.
Yes, he has.
That's his personality. He's very calm and speaks very intelligently. And
he puts off an air as if he knows absolutely everything that is happening and understands it perfectly. And he's just waiting for you to click in. And it's cool, but it's not my speed so much.
And I enjoy his stuff probably half the time.
I really like
it's all very expertly written, and he's very good at plots.
Yeah, I really like his aesthetic. I think that he's got a great eye. He knows how to put something together that fits his brand. He knows how to pick collaborators to work with. And he does his thing, and if you're into his thing.
Listen, I think his Fantastic Four run was fantastic. And I started to say the word, and then the back of my brain went, no, but it was already coming out, and I just decided to go with it. I actually think that was a book where there was a lot of emotion in it. Very unlike
it was. Him. I read bits of it.
It was very un-Hickman-like. And I don't want that to
be... all the kids and stuff. It was superhuman is what it was.
And I don't want it to sound like an insult. I think he does a certain kind of book really, really well. And whether or not that book is for you is up to you.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I fell off East to West. I really like Manhattan Projects, but I haven't been... like when the new trade comes out, I don't rush to read it like I do other things. Secret Warriors I fell off of, but I kind of regret that because I think it ended up strong from what I actually, that's a book for the last email. I went back and I got the trades for Secret Warriors. I haven't read them yet, but that's a book I went back to. So there you go, Josh and Josh.
And
Josh.
Me? Yeah.
It's a lot of Joshes. Us. So
I bet they were born in the late 70s, early 80s.
Contact us at ifanboy.com or leave us a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS 326-2697. And when you do that, we got a really fun voicemail this week that was like three times too long to use in the show. So make sure you keep that around 30 seconds if you want to get it on the show.
I'm going to edit that shit.
A quick reminder, next week is Valentine's Day for all you lovers out there. And that was a Back to the Future show.
Will you just start talking like a radio guy?
Yeah, and we're going to do a Valentine's Day themed episode in that we're going to do a bunch of emails that are relationship questions. We got a ton of them. So if you really have a good one, send it in. But if you don't worry about it. We have more than enough to do on the show. So, but if you have a good one, please do send it in. If you think you've got an interesting problem, it can be comics related. That's always a bonus, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. In fact, most of the ones we got are not comics related. But it'll be fun. Two guys, completely unqualified to give relationship advice, are going to be giving relationship advice next week. So tell your friends. That's next week on iFanboy.
But completely unqualified.
In the meantime,
I have been married successfully for 10 years.
Yeah, well, how were you as someone who dated?
I was okay at it. I just would totally get involved with everybody right away. Damn it.
Head over to iFanboy.com to comment on this show. You can talk.
You all come around. You came around, Kilpatrick.
Talk about this week's books. Find out all the other podcasts there. And you can follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually there at Jay Flanagan and at CS Kilpatrick.
And if you like the show, you can write us a review in iTunes or rate it in iTunes or do whatever you need to. Or even better yet, word of mouth is the best thing. You like the episode of the show, tell your friends about it, post it up on your social network, share those links, do the stuff like that. Every once in a while, somebody will say, they'll ask for on Twitter, we'll ask for a podcast. And then, we'll hear a couple of you guys chime in like, oh, my favorite podcast for a comics is iFanboy or just one I like. Doesn't have to be your favorite. That always means a lot. That's really cool. I always really love seeing that. It means we're doing something right for somebody, which is really cool. So thank you. Thank you for that. Do that. That's a helpful thing.
So that is it for this week's first show. We've done duos before, but this is our first official duo show.
We don't have a choice in it. This is like single guy apartment. Like we got divorced and we're like, well, I guess
it's the Odd Couple.
I guess we'll have to make dinner now. We don't like. Well, do we sit at the table or go to the TV or what do we do?
So, like on Friday nights, do we have to hang out together or can we make our own plans?
If I have somebody come over, do we have to be quiet? Are you gonna want to sleep?
Yeah, listen, you're gonna have to go in your room because it's time for Scandal.
I didn't want to talk to you about that. I'm so disappointed in you. I saw and I was like, woo-hoo! Oh, come on. You know what though? Not surprised.
Listen, I watched from noon till almost 12 hours of Scandal. Mm-hmm. It was awesome.
Can I tell you something?
Mm-hmm.
If I could sit in front of the TV for 12 hours straight and not have anybody ask me to do anything or to get them anything or to clean up vomit or take the dog out, just nothing, I would watch Scandal.
Just drinking Bellinis and watching Scandal.
I don't even know what a Bellini is. It was a joke on the kids in the hall. That's all I know.
I'll tell you next week.
Okay.
Until then, I'm Connor.
Josh, what's a Bellini?
You and I have memories longer than the road that stretches out ahead. Two of us wearing raincoats, standing solo in the sun. You and me chasing.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.